This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. 5 times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
It was nice to jump into the video stream of Jeremy and Joe. Say hi to a lot of you. I had no idea. I forgot it was live on video. I knew it was live radio, of course, but I just came into the studio because Nate had to scoot out and there was an empty chair, and I'm like, oh, I'll just go in there and join Joe for a minute, get ready for my show, the Extra Point Show here. And I sat down and then I realized pretty quickly, wait a minute, there's a camera in front of me, so this thing's going to go on and I'm going to say hi to people, and they're going to say hi to me and they're going to talk about me in the chat. So... And of course,
they were all complimenting your hair today.
They were all good.
It looks really good today, actually.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate that. Yeah, I did it. It took me a while this morning. And then they were complimenting my Syracuse quarter zip. So yes, I'm wearing Syracuse University gear, even though my team stinks in basketball and is not a part of this tournament. This is the first time, I believe this is true. This is correct. This is the first time that a whole class went through Syracuse for 4 years and never saw a tournament game. If you were a freshman at Syracuse 4 years ago, you did not see them play in the tournament your entire time in college, and it's the first time any freshman class entered went through 4 years and did not see them because they'd never gone that many years in a row without making it.
That's, wow, that's pretty crazy.
It's terrible, and I'm going to give you some stats also about the tournament in a minute that are terrible to me. But before I get to that, welcome into the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sal Capaccio with you. Hope you had a great weekend. I had a good weekend. Lots of hockey this weekend with Max. That's pretty cool. Always get a chance. There's some really good young hockey players. And I mean, like, you know, kids. Watching, I'm seeing some of these kids skate going, holy cow, man. So that was fun. Did that. And, of course, watched a lot of tournament action. I think that I'm a big college basketball fan. I have been. Even before I went to Syracuse, I was a Syracuse fan, and then I happened to go there. But, I mean, like, I always loved college basketball, the tournament, even in high school. I've always loved college basketball, even more, really, than college football, to be honest with you. And I'm, you know, a football guy from the standpoint of just the theater of it, the tournament. But maybe because growing up, you know, Syracuse was my team, and they're in the tournament, and I think one of the first times I ever really cried after a sporting event was Keith Smart in 1987 hitting the shot to beat Syracuse for Indiana. Like, I've always loved it. It has changed for me, for sure. It's changed because I'm now more into the coaches and players maybe than the teams, because I'm watching some of these games and I'm like, I don't really care who wins. You know, there was a time where I really cared because it was Big East and you have pride in your conference, or you have rivals, you don't want to see them win. And a lot of that is still true. Like, I was very conflicted in the UConn game yesterday, to be quite honest with you, UConn against Florida, because I've never liked either school. But I actually do like Danny Hurley, although Danny Hurley's getting to be a little bit of he's great of a coach as he is. Did you see the clip of Danny Hurley after the game yesterday? I mean, come on.
Yeah, come on. It's a little, yeah. You can tell it's getting a little up there in the ego.
Yeah, the whiny, like, yeah. Oh, hope they don't F you like they did us, he says to Baylor on the way out. You saw
it,
right?
Oh, yeah, where he's running down the tunnel and he screams.
Well, he's walking down the tunnel and he looks at people from Baylor who are about to go on the court to play their game. And he says, hope you don't blank us like they blank. Hope they don't blank you like they blanked us, meaning the refs. Come on, dude. You've won two national titles. Your team wasn't as good this year, and you lost to Florida, who's a really good team, right? So I do like Danny Hurley, but that's not for me. Like, come on. Take your loss, all right? And I also, though, I want to root for Carlin Hartman. Grand Island's own Carlin Hartman, the assistant coach at Florida. So I was conflicted in that game. So I don't really have necessarily teams I root for. I do have teams I root against sometimes. I root for players. How about Roddy Gale? Do you know who Roddy Gale is? Okay. So Roddy Gale plays for Michigan. He's like one of their best players. He's the guy. He's the kid who scored a bunch of points towards the end of the game. They had this big comeback. They scored all these points. And I guess I didn't put two and two together, but then I did. Roddy Gale grew up in Niagara Falls. He went to Loupport High School. He went there until I think maybe his junior year, and then he transferred to a high school out in Utah and a basketball school, and then he went to Ohio State. And of all places, after 3 years to transfer from Ohio State, he transferred to Michigan. And he's been doing great for them. But Roddy Gale is a local guy. And I root for the local guys. I root for the local stories, the local kids and coaches and things like that. I'm watching Phil Martelli Jr.'s press conference. Phil Martelli lost. What was the – let me just see – which game that was? Oh, yeah, Bryant. Bryant, and then I got to look at who they lost to. But either way, so Phil Martelli Jr. has his press conference, and it was a really great press conference about somebody asked him a question about, hey, we know how much your family means to you, for them to be on this journey, Bryant getting into the tournament and then losing, what's it been? And he was very emotional talking about his family, and then he mentions that they had to, like, his cousins, they drove to Buffalo and then flew out. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. And then he mentions Niagara. And I went back and looked. Yeah, Phil Martelli Jr. was an assistant coach at Niagara before moving on in the coaching world. So there's a lot of connections here to Western New York, and that's very cool. So I've seen that. I want to get to something else about the tournament in a minute. But as promised, Josh Schmidt, we have to give some love every day to who's leading the tournament in the Sal Sports Tournament Bracket Pool.
I just checked, and I'm in the top 100.
Ooh, are you really?
Yeah.
That's big time.
I'm in a seven-way tie for 88th place.
694 total complete brackets. 1,000 brackets actually signed up, but 694 actually completed brackets, which is amazing.
Mine doesn't look very good, though. I have St. John's in the final four.
Oh, my
wife. I have St. John's in the final now that I look at it again.
Yeah, Yana, she picked St. John's to win it all, so she's gonzo.
Yeah.
Max, my son Max, he has Florida winning it all, and he's still in it. I have Auburn winning it all. I'm still in it. But we are not anywhere close to the leaderboard. Here is your leaderboard on the Sal Sports CBSSports.com Bracket Challenge. And remember, what we did here was I promised you if we had 600 entrants, which we did, I would give a $100 gift card to the NCAA online shop to the first place winner, a $50 gift card to the second place winner, and a $25 gift card to the third place winner. And it's all free to enter. It was. But you had to enter last week before we started. And we talked about it here. I tweeted it out. And I appreciate everybody going and entering. All I asked in return was, go subscribe to my YouTube channel where you see lots of great content. That's it. So here we go. You ready? Number one, Zachary Schrantz has 246 points. Number two, a friend of mine who is a basketball coach and football coach in Florida named Sean Huber. He entered this. He actually is number two with 233 points. I got to let him know that. Number three, Todd Victory. That's a cool name. I don't know if it's Victory or Victory, but he's at 232, tied with Jeffrey Podgers, Carl Vanderbrook, Mark Post, Michael Apoka, Pete Sadler, Sean Layston, Timothy Wilson, and Kimberly Holmes. Out of all of that group, everybody I just read, that's the top three. There's a big tie for third place. Out of everybody in the top three, they all have Florida winning it except for Kimberly Holmes, who has St. John, so she's going to lose some points. So if you are one of the names I just read, you are right now in the top three out of 694 completed brackets and have a chance for one of these prizes. Very cool on all of you. For me, I'm in 535th place. Okay? There's a reason for that. I'm going to get to it in a second. Yana Capaccio, 632. My wife's not doing too well. Max, 182nd place. He'll take it. He's doing pretty well. And where are you? What number?
My best is 88.
Wow.
I have 88, 293, and 575.
Okay.
So
88.
One clearly stands out, but I only have a max of 273 points that I can get remaining.
Oh, yeah, that hurts.
So, it's not that far off the leaders, but
no.
I'm going to need a few miracles here.
So here's why I will tell you that part of the reason why I am in 535th place. Because in my brackets, I like to reward upsets, and I like to pick upsets. And you know we have not had this tournament? Upsets. I don't like it, okay? I don't like where it's gone. I don't like where it's going. I've made that clear. College sports. I'd like to get your thoughts on this as you watch the tournament. Are you all for all these blue bloods winning it and being where they are and getting into the Sweet 16? Or would you like to see some mid-majors and some upsets? Because I want to give you a stat. This comes to us from the Twitter account SB Unfurled. This is a St. Bonaventure blog. The Fans of the Bonnies, it's called. Not affiliated with St. Bonaventure University, but thank you very much. SB Unfurled. They do a really good job. And I saw this from them. This is amazing. Okay, some stats. 803-0550, by the way. And we're going to get to the Bills. We're going to get to the Sabres, I promise. But I want to go through this real quick. Sabres at the bottom of the hour with Paul Hamilton. Top of the hour, by the way. I'll let you know right now. Eric Turner from Cover One. Eric does a lot of film breakdown on NFL and Buffalo Bills players. He's done a lot on the Bills' new free agent signings. We're going to get to that with him and find out where a lot of these guys fit. Josh Palmer, Michael Hoyt, Larry Ogunjobi, Joey Bosa. We'll talk draft, but Eric Turner at the top of the hour, Paul Hamilton at 10:30. Are you liking this kind of new way of college basketball and college sports, and particularly seeing this, what's happening in basketball? Or are you like me and say, man, I just don't like it. I know I sound like old man screaming at clouds, but folks, I'm going to give you some stats here from SB Unfurled. This is the first ever Sweet 16 that every single school is in a Power 4 conference. Every one of them. How about this? If you took throughout history of the tournament, the Sweet 16s every year, and counted up how many different conferences they represent, the previous low before this year was 7. There are only, get it, 4 conferences represented in this year's Sweet 16. 4. They're all the Power 4. That's it. Every single team in the Sweet 16 is from a Power 4 conference. The first Sweet 16 seed with no 11 or more seeds since 2007. That's been almost 2 decades. There are a record 7 SEC teams that are playing next weekend. Now, good for them. They got a lot of teams in, but it's just, again, another example. This is also where this really sucks. Regardless of the teams and the conferences, the average margin of victory in the first round, 16.7 points. They're not even close games. They're not close games. We had one buzzer beater last night. That was amazing. Did you watch Maryland on the buzzer beater? Wow. That was what you call double onions.
Was it a travel?
You know, it's a good question. I think by letter of the law you could say so, but man, I don't know if I've ever, that just doesn't get called. Like, that's just too close, and he's driving. And a lot of people said it's not. He was gathering. It was a gather step. I don't know. It was very close. Very close. And then, speaking of blowouts, in the first round, there were 10 wins of 25 points or more, 10 games, that happened. I mean, if you bet the favorites the first two rounds, you won money. I don't know how it's going to turn out. Now look. Here's the offshoot. Here's the good part about it, if you want to say it that way. Look what you have coming up next weekend. It is a bunch of who's who in college basketball playing against each other. And you're going to get some incredible blue blood games. Okay? What do you got? Auburn against Michigan. Ole Miss against Michigan State. Florida against Maryland, Texas Tech against Arkansas, Kentucky, Tennessee should be great, Houston against Purdue, BYU, yes, they are now in a Power 4 conference, they're in the Big 12, against Alabama, and Nate Oates, Duke against Arizona, or I think we've had that a few times over the history of the tournament. So that's great. I'm all for watching these blue blood teams play each other as you get later in the tournament. I'm all for it. But what are we doing with, there's no chance for these mid-majors anymore. This is the new reality of college sports and college basketball especially. When SB Unfurled tweeted out what they did with the stats, they were quote tweeting a couple others. SEC, Big Ten, and Big 12 have effectively pushed any chance for mid-majors to mount any effective impact, says Scott Brand, who is a YouTuber for college basketball. And David Warlock points out, again, the previous record for fewest conferences represented in the Sweet 16 was 7. That happened a few times. Not only did you break that, you just shattered it to 4. That's it. They're all either SEC, Big 10, Big 12, ACC. That is the new Power 4, they call it. And it's here to stay, I think. Now, I would say expansion is part of this, right? I mean, everybody's kind of, you know, you get a team like BYU and you could say, well, they've been a mid-major or they've been in like not one of the Power 5. Now they are because of the conference, you know, realignment. And I get all that. It just sucks. I hate it. So there's my Monday. I was just saying musing. It's a rant a bit. I don't like it. And I love seeing, as much as I'm a Syracuse fan and love Syracuse, they haven't been there. They stink right now in basketball. They have. Hopefully they'll be better next year with Sadiq White and Kion Anthony coming to town and, you know, playing for them. But as much as that's the case, I love watching upsets and I love watching some of the Cinderella stories. And when you get to the 16 and in Elite Eight, I'm fine with those teams when they lose and you get blue bloods. But it's always great to have a few of those stories. We have none this year. We have none this year because of this. It is NIL. It is portal. It's the new reality, what we live in. 803-0550 is the number to call here if you want to join in on that discussion or anything else here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sabres with a nice win last night. Yesterday afternoon, I should say. It was only the 6th loss in regulation, I believe, for the Winnipeg Jets, Josh, at home. The 6th overall this year. 6th regulation home loss for the Winnipeg Jets this year. Nice game. I'm going to say what I said last week when they beat Vegas. And what was the other one? They had the back-to-back wins. They beat Vegas and...
That was their 6th home loss all season.
That was their 6th.
That's wild.
In regulation.
Yeah. But that's crazy. I didn't know they were doing that well at home.
I'm going to say what I said last week when the Sabres had a couple nice wins. It's nice. And I like seeing it. I was with some people yesterday who said, well, I just want to see them lose and get a better draft pick. I don't care about that stuff anymore. I just don't care. I know a lot of people do. I don't. Who cares? They've had great draft picks. They've had the number one pick twice, the number two pick a couple times. I mean, what do you need these great draft picks? You're going to get a good draft pick anyway. So I still like to see them win, but what does it matter, right? It's like at the end of the year, you get this, you feel good about what's happening, and then it just changes anyway because the year ends and everything is different. Man, I would do J.J. Paterka look good. Boy, what is going to happen with him this offseason? I keep going back to what Elliot Friedman kept tweeting out about J.J. Paterka. Do you remember, Josh, leading up to the trade deadline, and he kept putting Paterka's name out there? He kept saying, Paterka, Paterka. He kept rising him up the boards. And then there was that whole stuff with the Rangers, we all thought. But the one thing he kept writing, which sticks with me, and I'm like, does he know something? Did somebody say they're going to do it? He kept saying and kept writing, Elliot Friedman, that Paterka is an offer sheet candidate. And he is an RFA. He could get an offer sheet. What does that offer sheet look like? I'm going to tell you this. A lot of times, an offer sheet, I'd be like, okay, you're going to get some really good compensation. Again, not what the Sabres need. They need good players, not good draft picks. They need good people on the NHL roster, not playing in the AHL. We're done with that. We've had that for years. Every year or two, I look up and I read, the Sabres are the youngest team in the league. Every few years, I look at the AHL standings and see, the Rochester Americans are doing really well. They have these great prospects. I see leaders at the top or goaltenders, whatever. How many times have we got to be there? I don't need to be there anymore. You want to go and root for losses because you think it gives them a better chance at the number one pick? Fine, have at it. I don't care. Doesn't matter to me. Give me players. Get the number one pick and trade the damn thing. Get the number five pick and trade it. For guys who can play now on this team in 2025-26, I should say.
If you're looking at offer sheets for J.J. Paterka this offseason, the compensations go like this. So in the range of $6.8 to $9.1 million, the team that is offered, like, if he lost, if they got...
What would the Sabres get if they rescinded him to a team that offered that?
The Sabres would get a first-round pick, a second-round pick, and a third-round pick in next year's draft. If it goes from 9.1 to 11.4, they get two first-round picks, one second-round pick, one third-round pick.
Hold on. Two firsts, one second, one third?
Yep, and then $11.4 million or more, the Sabres get that team's next four first-round picks.
I don't think anybody would be putting that much.
No, but the way I look at it with this whole offer sheet thing, if you have a team come to you and say, hey, we've offer sheeted J.J. Paterka for like 7 years, $7 million, you just say, cool, thanks, and go sign that contract. Like, the Sabres are in that position where he's a player you want to keep, at least I think anyway. I don't know why you wouldn't want to keep him, and you have the cap space, right? Like, you have.
I think what you're saying is this, and I agree with you. Let the other team do the negotiation.
Exactly, exactly.
This is what the Ravens did with Lamar Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
The Ravens basically said, Lamar, if you can go find another offer, go ahead. And see, and they had the right to match it.
Right.
Now, he still stayed. This is exactly, I agree with you.
Yeah.
Fine, you want to do that? Match it. I would rather have J.J. Paterka than these draft picks.
Now, if you get in the upwards of $9 million conversation, then you kind of can weigh things because you can get more more bang for your buck there. But that's kind of just how much you want to pay the guy, right? Like at that point. But that's a completely different conversation than if someone's offering him $7 million, which you've already given to five other players. Like, I think it's just so what if he gets offer sheeted? That's how I feel about it, because you're just going to match it.
I agree. And what is a team really forcing the Sabres into a tough situation with offer sheets? They shouldn't be. They have enough money, right? Like, a lot of times they do it because, hey, we'll offer. They can't match it. That's not the case here.
That happened last year with the Oilers. They lost two players.
Both to the Blues.
Yeah, because they couldn't match the offer sheets.
What's interesting about this is, this all could be impacted because they don't have to really offer Jack Quinn all that much, it appears. Maybe you can, you know, he's going to be an RFA. I don't think he's getting an offer sheet from anybody for that kind of money. So you can offset it, too. Let's go to Mark in North Tonawanda before we hit the first break and hear from Paul. What's up, Mark?
How you doing?
Good, thanks.
Yeah, I just was listening, and that was an awesome win by the Sabres last night. I'm always looking at the bright side of things. So the thing I want to say, though, I do care about the draft pick they get, because I do not want them to draft any small players. There's a player I really would like to see him draft, Porter Martone, 6'3", 208 pounds, and they said he plays like Tkachuk. Sign me up, because the Sabres need players like that.
Yeah, you care about the player they draft, but you don't care where the you don't care where they're drafting. You care about the player they draft, but my point is, I don't care where they're drafting. I don't need losses to be drafting first or second. They're going to get a good pick anyway.
Well, I'm happy whether they win or lose because he's not going to last past the fourth pick in the draft. So that's where I'm heading, and I'm a big Sabre fan. So
what's his name?
Don't do good.
What's his name?
Porter.
Yeah, Martone. Yeah, I see him from. I'm looking at him now, Mississauga.
Yes.
All right. All right. Thanks a lot.
Yep.
Yeah, you got a 6'3", 207. I don't know a lot about these prospects. I haven't looked into them. That'll happen at some point. Got enough on my mind with the Bills prospects, free agency in the draft. But thank you for that. Porter Martone. You're right. I mean, they would have to probably be in the top three or four to draft him if you want that guy and that, you know, plays like Kachuk. I'll take a guy like that. The point I'm making is, and I appreciate the call, Mark, I don't need draft picks. I don't need, great, give J.J. Pachurka an offer sheet. And if you think he's not worth paying that much, that's a different conversation than, oh, my God, give me the draft picks. They've had draft picks. Who cares anymore? I don't care about them anymore. I don't care about prospects. Prospect fatigue, right? That's what we call it now. I think Jeremy said that a while back. I don't care about the picks. I don't care about the prospects. I care about this team getting better now, quickly. How do you do that? Get your picks and trade them. That's what you can do. We'll take a timeout. Paul Hamilton on the way next. Nice win for the Sabres in Winnipeg. Obviously, it doesn't mean anything in the standings, but what does it do for, you know, this team going forward and closing out the season here with about, what, 10, 12 games remaining? We'll do that with Paul Hamilton after this timeout on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
It's Paul Hamilton.
That's what they called me in college, it's the bone.
He has the facts to back up his opinions.
People will ask me, well, how are the Sabres going to win tonight? I don't have a clue.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
All right, Paul Hamilton joins me now on the West Her Hotline after the Sabres go to Winnipeg yesterday and come up with a nice victory. They beat the Winnipeg Jets 5-3 after the empty net goal at the end. Nice, by the way, and Brian McLeod, nice backhand over top of everybody to get it in the net. Paul, how did they do it? The Sabres go to Winnipeg and give them their sixth regulation loss at home this year.
Yeah, and the Jets had been waiting for them since Thursday. For Buffalo, it was 3 games in 4 and back-to-back. They were in Minnesota the day before. Winnipeg came in with a 714 points percentage. Meaning they 71%, which isn't too bad. 25-5-4 at home. They hadn't lost at home in regulation since January 18th. They were 7-0-1. So everything was against them. And Buffalo does not usually do well at all in back-to-backs. But you know, they got great goaltending from James Reimer, who actually stood on his head. They got a break that Hullabuck was not in goal, and Eric Comrie played like he did against when he was a Buffalo Sabre. And, you know, it was a gutty effort, I thought. You know, it wasn't just Reimer. I mean, you know, the Sabres, you know, yeah, they had to rely on Reimer, but they were very opportunistic, you know, in their scoring to be able to pick up some goals. I thought as the game went on, they got better. I thought in the third period it was a really gutty effort. And the shorthanded goal by Tuck, I think, tells you a lot. I mean, first of all, Tuck had blocked a shot, a key shot, and the penalty kill. And then Clifton, you know, right near the blue line, just dove to get a puck out. I mean, and got there and tipped it up to McLeod, who puts a perfect pass on Tuck's stick to send him in alone. I mean, so you saw desperation, you know, in that penalty kill. And in a time where they shouldn't have been killing a penalty, it was absolutely a penalty on Scheifele, mm-hmm. who like had a lock on Samuelson's stick. He grabbed his stick and just held on to it. But the referee at center ice, this was behind the net, the referee at center ice, they had their back to him. Well, he thought it was Samuelson committing the penalty and called it. There's a referee standing right there looking at the two of them. And he didn't say anything. You could obviously see Samuelson's stick was being held. So Buffalo, instead of being on the power play, was shorthanded. So it was kind of justice, you know, that they actually scored a shorthanded goal because they should have been on the power play.
Sabres win yesterday in Winnipeg. J.J. Paterka gets the scoring going, and he has now 22 goals in the season. We just had a short discussion on him. I want to ask you about this, Paul. He's going to be an RFA. We've talked about him before. I just keep sticking in my head that Elliot Friedman kept mentioning he would be, he would be an offer sheet candidate from some team, you know, this offseason. What do you think that looks like? How do you think they proceed with J.J. Paterka? Will they just let another team kind of negotiate for them and give them an offer sheet? Will they want to get ahead of this? How do you see all this playing out?
Well, they could have got ahead of it since July 1st. I mean, he was eligible to be re-signed at any point during that time, but I think the Sabres maybe learned their lesson from all the contracts they signed. They signed people to like that early, and some of them I think they're regretting now, and so they didn't do it with any of them. You know, whether it was Byram, whether it was Paterka, whether it was Quinn, whether it was Levi, whether it was McLeod, none of them, you know, got early contracts. So, you know, I wish there were more offer sheets in the NHL, and every time there is one, then everybody thinks, all right, now we're going to go. We're going to get offer sheets. And the St. Louis Blues had two guys that they from the Edmonton Oilers that they signed offer sheets, and they got those players, Holloway and Broberg, and they've been very useful players to St. Louis. But the NHL has this goofy thought, well, I don't want GMs to get mad at me. You know, what? It's in the collective bargaining agreement. You're doing nothing wrong. What do you mean you don't want GMs to get mad at you? You know, and so I would love to see offer sheets around the NHL be used as a tool. And but everybody gets all excited that, well, now we're going to see offer sheets. I hope so around the league, but because I think it's a great way to build your team if you can get a really good young player to an offer sheet and get him on your team. I think it's great. And yeah, you got to give up some picks, and I'm like, so what? I mean, you got to give up some picks if you can get that kind of a player. And yeah, I think J.J. Paterka would be a candidate for an offer sheet, but I'm not convinced in the least that offer sheets are going to become a thing again just because they were used last year.
I also don't really care for the picks in return, to be quite honest, Paul. We've been down this road. As you say, who cares for the team giving up the picks? I say in the Sabres situation, I don't need the picks. They've had a lot of picks. They picked first in the NHL recently. They've picked second a couple times recently. They have good prospects. I'm tired of the picks. I don't need the picks. I want players here.
And forget about the goals. I think what I've liked about J.J. Paterka is I've seen an improvement in his overall play. You know, I've seen him back check hard and break up some plays to get back and help out. I've seen after a turnover on a power play, him hightail it back to try to break up a play and doing so. Is it perfect yet? No. But I still think it's been good. I think it's been better. I think it's been quite a bit better, actually. So it's obviously something he's been working on in his game to get better at. So, you know, I think not only are we talking about goals, and certainly goals have been going in for him lately. He's coming off a 28-goal season, and that was his 22nd goal, and he's been on quite a streak. And really, he was out with injury and came back and didn't miss a beat. I mean, he scored in three games in a row since coming back. So, you know, he was ready to come back from injury, and that is not hindering him whatsoever.
You mentioned Ryan McLeod. I can't imagine this general manager would trade Matthew Savoy, bring Ryan McLeod in, and then all of a sudden just bail on him after a year. He's going to be a restricted free agent as well. What do you think the situation is with him and how they feel about him and the season that he's had?
Well, he's doing, I think, exactly what they felt, because I remember when Kevin Adams traded for him, he goes, we feel there's an upside in his offense, you know, from what there was in Edmonton. He was, and I said it when they made the trade, because a lot of people in Buffalo were upset. Well, they traded Savoy for him. Yeah. I believe there were, five number one picks in Rochester right now. Savoy could have been number six. Yeah. You know, and so you've got all this, I call it currency, They all can't come up and be Buffalo Sabres. There's too many of them.
Yep.
You know? So.
And by the way, Matthew Savoy has only had a cup of coffee with the Oilers this year for four games and sent back down.
Right. And you know what? He may become a fantastic hockey player. He also may become a bust. Mm-hmm. We don't know. Nobody knows. And McLeod was exactly what Buffalo needed. They did not have a player like that. You know, good teams have a very good two-way center that they can count on. And, you know, he brings speed, which Buffalo didn't have a lot of. He wins faceoffs, which Buffalo didn't have a lot of. And you can use him in a lot of different situations. And that offensive upside may have even been better than they thought from what they've seen so far this year. And a lot of his goals, if you've noticed, have come because of the speed. He'll pull away from the defense and give himself a breakaway. The shorthanded goal the other afternoon, he pulled away and got the shorthanded goal. So you'll see that from him too. So, yeah, I think definitely you've got to get him signed. I think he has proven that his worth as a Sabre, even if you want to go last night or yesterday afternoon, mm-hmm. the backhand from in front of Reimer with the net open, you know, and he backhands it the length of the ice almost and gets it to the net to get them the empty net goal. He made two plays that helped them win that hockey game. That shorthanded pass to Tuck to put him in and to get that goal and then to get the clincher into the empty net. Plus, you know, it's a four-point night for him, or afternoon. Yeah. I keep saying night. It was afternoon. It was a four-point afternoon for him. So, definitely he would. And I feel the same way about Byram. You made a really good trade. The Mittelstadt has not worked out at all. He didn't even last a year, or just a year, in Colorado, and off he went to Boston. Byram, I think, has, you know, turned the corner here in Buffalo and played very well. And, you know, you make a good trade there. I think you have to find a way to get him signed too.
I'm glad you brought up James Reimer. You mentioned his name right there on the McLeod goal. Boy, I was so happy for him yesterday. You could not lose that game after the performance he put on.
It was crazy. And he only got beat. The only goal he gave up in the beginning was went in off Malenstein's skate. I'm almost positive the shot by Ehlers was tipped by Power. The way the puck took off and kind of lofted, it kind of shot up. It just seemed, and the stick appeared to be in the way. I couldn't tell from the replay, but I'm pretty sure that hit Power's stick and went up on him. But other than that, I mean, he just was save after save after save. I was writing after the game. I'm like, I can't put every save in here that was a fantastic save, or I'll be sitting here writing all night. It was just, you know, and in the third period, as I said, I thought the Sabres played a little bit better. They still needed him to make the big saves at the big time, but I thought the Sabres, you know, tightened up a little bit in the third period and kind of got more into the game. And it wasn't a game that the Sabres were – I mean, I think they gave everything they had, because it's, you know, when you're in 3 and 4 playing in all different cities, I mean, you weren't in the same city for any of the games. You know, you've got this. This is the game that both Ruff and Granato have talked about, where you've got to learn how to win with your B game. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what they did there. You know, they weren't going to be able to get up to their A game because of the situation they're in. But that doesn't mean you can't win the hockey game. You know, and that's what good teams have figured out. And Sal, look at, you know, what you look at the team now, and they're starting to learn a little bit, but I think to be a good team, this little stretch here, you know, let's analyze it a little bit. They've played pretty well throughout this stretch, and have shown some improvement. They've beaten Edmonton. They've beaten Vegas. They've beaten Boston. They've beaten Winnipeg. Other than the Detroit game, though, the only game, that's really the only game they should have lost, that a good team would have lost. And that's what they got to learn, what they did in Winnipeg. Minnesota, you played 50 good minutes, and you played 10 horrendous minutes, and you lost a hockey game because of 10 minutes in a game. That's where, you know, a good team wins that hockey game, because in the first period where Buffalo played great, they had at least 4 or 5 grade A scoring chances, didn't score on any of them. They could have had a 3-0 lead easily in that game. And that's where, you know, they got to get back. Utah, you're set up to get a 6-on-4 trailing 3-2, and nobody on the ice is yelling for Tage Thompson, who doesn't know there's a delayed penalty, to hand Utah the puck. And you get a bad break, and it goes back in your own net. These are two games where when you become a better team, you right now are on a 5-game winning streak and won 6 out of 7. Just little things. We're talking about very little things that could be the difference between them being on a 5-game winning streak right now and those two losses in Utah and Minnesota that were right there to win. Detroit, no. I know they were only a goal down, but they didn't play well at all in Detroit. That is just one of those games you're going to lose. And that's where I think when you're looking at this team getting better, that's what they have to learn, to be on a 5-game winning streak right now instead of winning 3 out of 5.
Speaking of Detroit and the number 5, it's been 5 games since that Detroit game. The last time Josh Norris actually suited up for this team, he's a guy that's had injuries. The Sabres trade for him, and suddenly he's out of the lineup right away. A, do you have an update on Joshua Norris or any other injuries, obviously, for us? And B, is this something Sabres fans should legitimately be concerned about with a guy that has had an injury history?
Oh, with 4 games and 6, they're not going to practice today, obviously. And, you know, we'll see at a morning skate tomorrow. He hasn't practiced with the team, but Zucker came right back into the lineup without practicing with the team, a morning skate, and was back in. So, you know, we'll see tomorrow against Ottawa in the morning skate where he's at, if he's at, even out there. Lindy Ruff, you know, as watching his press conferences throughout these games, never ruled it out that it could happen. You know, he was hoping to get him back on the ice towards, as he said, the end of last week. Again, Buffalo's wasn't doing a lot of practicing. They were basically playing games. So, you know, we'll see where, you know, Norris may be down there skating right now, you know, and we may see him in the morning skate tomorrow. We may not, but at least it sounds like if you know, he's close, but we'll see where it, I'm sure he would love to play against the Senators tomorrow.
Real quickly, Yuri Kulik, anything on him?
He was not on the trip. Okay. Normally when you're in concussion protocol, you're going to be in that for at least 7 days. So, you know, he wasn't with them for 7 days. They left on Sunday, came back on Sunday. So, again, we'll see where he's at when they get back. We'll see if he's back on the ice tomorrow and how he's feeling. But Lindy, with him not even being there, when he was asked about him, you know, during the press conferences, he basically was like, well, I don't really have an update, because he really wasn't with him. So we'll see what that amounts to and how he's feeling after over a week now.
Thanks a lot, Paul. Have a great rest of your week, but I'm sure we'll catch up a little bit later. Thanks, buddy.
Sounds good. Take care.
All right, Paul Hamilton right there on the Wester Hotline. His appearances on WGR are brought to you by Equitable Advisors, thinking about today and planning for tomorrow, and by Relax Honda. Relax, we got this. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back here very quickly, get to the top of the hour. Eric Turner of Cover One is going to join us to break down the Bills' new free agents on video and what he sees.
Here we go. 3.7 seconds left. Maryland has not made a shot in the last 2:27. If they don't make one here, their season is over. Gillespie to inbound. He finds Queen. Queen turns, puts it up at the buzzer, and in! Maryland is headed to the Sweet 16 for the second time in 22 years. It's the freshman, Derek Queen. He's a Maryland hero.
That was Tyler Lochte of WMUC Radio. I believe that is a student radio station at the University of Maryland. And very cool when you hear that, right? That's very cool when you get those calls from the student stations. I know it was High Point was playing Purdue, I think it was, and they were doing a good story on TV about the High Point broadcasters, and they showed the crew, the High Point crew. They were doing the radio, and these kids were just having so much fun, the smiles on their faces. They're at the tournament calling play-by-play. How cool is that,
right? Have you ever heard their play-by-play?
No.
It's like they went viral for it on TikTok.
And
they're just – they're hilarious.
They just have fun with it?
Yeah, because they do play-by-play more so like fans. Like they just like really get into it. Like they do a very good job.
Yes.
I don't want to discredit them by saying
sure.
that. But there are –
it's just unique.
Right. There are moments, though, where it's like they just – like the color guy just goes crazy, and then the play-by-play guy is trying to like keep it on the rails and everything. But
I love it.
They're getting so excited.
Yeah.
And again, no disrespect to them, because I don't want to make it sound like they're just doing it as fans, because they do a very good job.
But I would say this.
It's a really cool experience.
It's a different way. It's unique. They're a student station, so good for them. And they got highlighted on CBS, so which was cool, or whichever station it was on at the time.
Yeah, CBS, I think.
Yesterday in the car, I couldn't watch some of the games, so I had to turn it on Sirius XM. Jason Benetti was calling a couple games in the early. He is amazing. Jason Benetti is one of the greatest play-by-play announcers of our generation, and he does everything now. I don't know if he does football, actually. I haven't heard him do football, but certainly baseball. He's about the White Sox. He's been with I think he went to Syracuse. I think he's from Central New York, if I remember. But either way, he was phenomenal on the call on the basketball games that I listened to yesterday. So he's really, really good at what he does. That was fun to kind of listen to him driving around, call the early games yesterday for the NCAA tournament. And obviously the Sweet 16 kicks off on Thursday, the Final Eight, that's Thursday, Friday, the Elite Eight on Saturday, Sunday. Then we get to the Final Four in a weekend. All right, Eric Turner, Cover One. You might be familiar with his work. He's been on WGR before. We've done some stuff together. Does a great job breaking down film of NFL players, bills, schemes, things like that. I asked him to come on to provide some insight into what he's seen from Michael Hoyt, Larry Ogunjobi, Joshua Palmer, and Joey Bosa, and how they may fit into what the Bills like to do. So Eric Turner from Cover One, next on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Josh, you know what time of year it is? It's that time of year where I look at how many people have entered the transfer portal on a daily basis to have these numbers climbing up. Remember last year was blown away, right?
Didn't it go like up to like hundreds at a hundreds at a time?
In basketball, this is basketball right now. As of today, 610 names in the transfer portal.
Wow.
And we are not even, there are still 16 teams playing in college basketball.
How much do you think it'll be at this year by the end of it?
Oh, it'll be probably close to 1,500.
Really?
I think
it'll be over 1,000, but...
I mean, maybe. I don't know exactly. I will say this. I looked 10 minutes ago, there were 600. I just looked, there's 610. It's like one a minute climbing up. It's unbelievable, right? Yeah, this is the time of year. I'm going to be updating, hey, every day. Hey, we're up to 800 people in the transfer portal, 900 people in the transfer portal. It's unbelievable, this thing, and what it's become, I guess. Welcome back to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sal Capaccio with you here on WGR Sports Radio 550. Hey, if you want to tweet me at Sal Sports, that was always getting connected with our fans. It's brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. So free agency still rolling on. The draft is exactly 1 month from tonight. If you haven't followed and watched what Eric Turner and the gang are doing over at Cover One, they do a great job of breaking down film, Bills players, NFL players, draft prospects, and he had some real good stuff on some of the guys the Bills have signed, so I reached out to Eric to join me today on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, and he's on the Wester Hotline. Good morning, buddy. How are you?
Thanks, Al. Appreciate you having me on, brother.
Yeah, no problem at all. All right, I feel like, I don't know if you've ever seen when Colin Cowherd brings on, who is it, what he has, he comes on, he says, what does the tape say? I want to say that to you. What does the tape say, Eric? All right. Anyway, let's do it. Let's start with Joshua Palmer. They're one of the first guys that they sign in free agency, a wide receiver. Eric, what does the tape say to you about how he fits in the Bills' offense?
Listen, I love that intro. That's perfect. I'm gonna hang my hat on that one. Yeah, when I watched Palmer's film, he just knew how to win. You know, whether it's with his size, being 6'1", you know, 210 plus, or his route running, and that's where he kind of hangs his hat, right? The route running, but his ability to separate at all three levels, his ability to separate at the top of breaks, he's a guy that I'm sure probably doesn't get the respect when it comes like to the physical measurables and speed and creating separation that way. But I bet if you talked and polled a lot of cornerbacks at the NFL level, they would mention his name as a guy that is of difficult cover because of his ability to sell routes and to make things look similar until that moment of truth when he breaks and he creates that separation.
Do you think that this was a player that the Bills just really needed from a stylistic standpoint? Is there anything about Palmer's game specifically that you felt that they needed to target? Because I know you were on him early, and you said this is a guy that they should want to bring in.
Well, yeah, like I said, when I started with the film, he stood out. And then I looked at the advanced metrics, and I'm like, holy cow, he really stood out from a perspective of creating separation, especially if you're looking at his man routes, which was like up over 100 routes last year in man, and he created a lot of separation. He was in a lot of those stats near the top or top rank, top 10 in those stats. And so the film and the analytics matched up. And I just think about Joe Brady and how well he schemed up and really curated this offense. And really at a point when Josh has kind of evolved from just a guy that, you know, for many years just relied on athleticism outside of structure type plays, or last year he did a lot of stuff within structure, pure progression type stuff that really relied on Allen being and throwing in rhythm. And I think Palmer fits that perfectly when you're talking a scheme perspective, the X-type player that can really play outside along the boundary, win outside the numbers, but also, if needed, can bump inside and create mismatches against linebackers and nickelbacks.
Do you think it says anything about Keon Coleman from what you've seen from him and the way the Bills have talked about him? Because he's a guy that obviously doesn't run down the field, get separation, but he gets separation in his own way on the outside as well.
Absolutely. I think that's probably the guy that's going to benefit the most from having Palmer in the room. He's very similar skill set, very similar, you know, physical measurables. And again, I talk about that pros pro in Palmer. I think Keon's going to learn a ton from Keon Coleman. And I think just from all the breadcrumbs that we've heard from the staff and even from the player himself, I feel like Keon Coleman, you know, his craft and recommitting to it this offseason, going into the season next year, I think he's going to pick up a lot from Palmer. And like I said, I think he'll benefit the most.
We'll circle back to wide receiver when we talk about some draft prospects and what they need. But let's go to the defensive side. They signed Michael Hoyt and Larry Ogunjobi, and I understand that the PED suspension is happening. But let's just talk about them and where they fit in this defense. When everybody's available, everybody's healthy, we're halfway through the year, where does Michael Hoyt fit into this defense? He's a guy that really has so many different ways you can use him. How do the Bills figure out how to use him?
Yeah, that's what he excites me from a schematic standpoint as well, because he's played several different positions along the D-line. He's played off the ball, on the ball, at linebacker. But I think really what the Bills were trying to do with him is two things. One, bring on a guy that can help in obvious pass rush situations, third down situations, with his football IQ and acumen. Because, again, he's played several positions, and he knows how to win, whether he's at D-tackle, D-end, off the ball. And so I think that football intelligence and pass rush acumen is going to help the third down pass rush packages where he specialized as what the Rams would call a spinner role. It's kind of like an off the ball linebacker type, but also lined up, you know, inside linebacker, D tackle at times. I think that's kind of what the Bills were envisioning with Dwayne Smoot last year. And if you go back and watch some of the film on those obvious third down pass rush situations, Smoot was making a lot of those line calls. And that is what Michael Hoyt brought to the Rams in that spinner role last year on third down. So I think that's the big thing with him. And it's just going to unlock a different set of, you know, creativity to the Bills defense that we haven't seen since a guy that we comped into was Lorenzo Alexander. And it kind of reminds me of, like, that tight end, that really good tight end on offenses where, like, Kyle Juszczyk, who's kind of that clone, that tight end fullback. When he comes onto the field, the defense has to realize, like, okay, are we going to match with a third linebacker or are we going to match with our nickel? Because he's that talented in the pass game as well. Hoyt's very similar on the defensive side of the ball where you have to account for him as a pass rusher, but you also have to account for him in coverage when they spin out post-snap.
It's interesting you say that. I actually asked Lorenzo about Michael Hoyt and the comp, and he said something very interesting to me. He said his first year when Sean McDermott took over and he was already here and he had that monster year the year before, he said they were trying to figure out how to use him best. But then his second year, they really understood more how to use him best. And the numbers bear it out, Eric, whereas his first year he had 3 sacks and he jumped to 6.5. He had 2 interceptions his second year. What's the trick, I guess, the Bills are facing here in the challenge of, okay, you do a lot of things really well, but we can't get lost in trying to just put you everywhere and maybe focusing in on a couple things you do really well in certain matchups.
Right, and that's why I said I think that when they signed him, it was going to be more of that third down role, because when the Bills are in third down, obvious pass rush situations, you've seen them do some, you know, semi-creative stuff this last couple of years, whether it's having six defensive backs and Dime in there, whether it's having, you know, three defensive linemen and then, you know, a couple of linebackers. And so I think Hoyt can be in there on those third downs. And, you know, he may be in a two-point stance over the guard on third down, but not even rush the passer, end up dropping out, like kind of like Milano did in that, in those spy situations. And so I think they can get back to some of that creativity that really makes the offense guess, okay, they may be only sending four rushers, which has been the Bills' philosophy predominantly, but which four rushers are coming when Hoyt is in the game?
All right, let's talk about rushers. Joey Bosa, they go and get the dynamic player from L.A. Obviously, some injuries have slowed him down the last few years. What do you see from Joey Bosa? What did you see from him on the film that you've watched, and how will he fit in the Bills' defense?
I mean, when you watch the film and you don't look at any production numbers or anything like that or any injury reports, you could tell he was hampered by something. You know, you could tell he was injured and working through and playing injured the entire year. But there were glimpses towards the end of the year of the old Joey Bosa. But again, you could tell he was still injured. Still has a very good first step, but he's more of that predominant speed to power type pass rusher still, which he's probably in the upper tier when we're talking about that. When you want those pass rushers to, you know, work off the edge and work through the tackle rather than trying to go around the tackle, maybe getting run wide of the quarterback spot. He wants to take that shortest, quickest line to the quarterback through that tackle. Still has very good hand usage. That really didn't drop off. And just he understands pass sets by the tackles, but also the depth of the drop of the quarterback. So he has a good idea where that quarterback's setting up and what move to use to get there quickly.
Do you think he could be he should be at this point a three-down player considering the roster and how it's constructed at his age, the injuries, what you've seen from him as an edge rusher, and also keeping him healthy, obviously?
Right. Last year, with those injuries, even the Chargers were very calculated mm-hmm. with his usage. I mean, if you look at the down splits, first, second, third down, it was pretty even, 150 snaps across the board. They were very calculated with him. I think the Bills will do the same thing. One, you know, calculated going into the game, but also I think the Bills naturally do that with their defensive line rotation. So I think it works out in both ways. So I do think they will manage his reps and load and obviously have him predominantly in pass rush situations. And that's what excites me about him is because you add him into the lineup in those situations, and now the opposing offensive coordinator, the offensive line coach, and that quarterback throughout the week in those situations have to, okay, ID, where is Joey Bosa, and how are we going to get the protections to slow him down? He was doubled nearly 40% of the time last year, more than Khalil Mack, obviously. And so that to me is like, okay, if they're doubling him and they're sliding protections and they're sending chips his way, what's that going to do as a force multiplier for the D-tackles and D-ends opposite him?
Let's talk about Larry Ogunjobi on the interior. The Bills go get him. Obviously, he's also facing a six-game PED. Talking with people in Pittsburgh, they say, well, maybe wasn't the greatest defense for him. He was productive at times. There were other times he kind of disappeared. What do you see from him, and how do you think he fits?
Yeah, he definitely was playing out of position or not being maximized mm-hmm. in the way that I think the Bills are going to, because he played more of an odd front, so more of a 3-4 type front, and he was a DN that was asked to, in many ways, stack and shed and read. So you're reading the offensive linemen, you're determining what they're running against you, and then you're stack and shedding so that the other four linebackers can go make plays. And so that, to me, kind of minimized what I think his strengths are, and his strengths are his first-step explosion, his ability to initially quickly win positional leverage into the gap, and then going from there being disruptive. Is it always pretty? No, he wins ugly in a lot of ways, but he creates chaos at the point of attack. And that's why I think he is a great fit for the Bills, whether you're talking being a backup three tech to Ed Oliver or even challenging Daquan Jones for starting reps at nose tackle. He's played that position in the Bills-type scheme in Cincinnati, and he's done it with the Cleveland Browns. And he won a lot. I mean, he was playing a 200-400 snaps as a nose tackle in a similar front to the Bills. And now, albeit it was a few years ago. So I do think he's a great fit. Obviously, they'll have to wait for him and Hoyt for a few games because of the suspensions. But I do think he's a great fit. And I think that regardless of where they put him with that rotation, I think he's going to make plays and maximize those reps.
Eric Turner joining me here on the Western Hotline and the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. You can follow him on Twitter at Eric. That's with a K, by the way, at Eric J. Turner. He is the founder of Cover One Football. You can follow them at Cover in the number one, Cover One. All right. Before we get to the draft, something really interesting that you did at the end of last year that I referred to a lot here on the radio was comparing Milano and Dorian Williams and the Bills' decision to stick with Matt Milano when he came back from injury. And I thought that was really well done. Maybe you can explain to people not only A, why the Bills stuck with Matt Milano after the injury when he came back, but B, why they've also decided to still have Matt Milano on the roster, albeit on a restructured contract, but he is coming back in 2025 to be their starting will linebacker.
I think that comes to, one, obviously experience in big games and in big positions. He's always been that playmaker for the Bills, and they're loyal, let's be honest. They're pretty loyal to a lot of the players, especially their draft picks. But Milano's still a better cover linebacker. That is one issue with Dorian that we've seen. Now, has he progressed? Absolutely. But Dorian Williams has been more of a run-and-chase guy, and in many ways the scheme, it changes just a little bit when he's in there because they want to funnel plays to him so he can go make tackles because he's a great tackler. He might be one of the most consistent tacklers at the linebacker position for the Bills, and he's got that athleticism to go with it. But he's still moving through and working through some of those struggles and ups and downs in coverage. You know, one play he'll get beat on a wheel route up the sideline, and then in the fourth quarter the offense tries it again, and then he'll go ahead and make a play. So there is you know, incremental development when it comes to that. But Matt Milano, he's still a better cover linebacker, and he's seen it a lot more. And I think that, you know, in many ways, what they did with his contract, I think they still believe he can come back to, what is it, 85% of what elite Matt Milano is. And so I do think that we'll see situations where maybe, you know, Dorian does see the field a little bit. And, of course, now that's if even with Milano and, you know, his health and injury history, we'll have to see there. But I think having guys like Milano, Dorian Williams, even Michael Hoyt, because when I interviewed him and did a film room with him, he talked about during the week, most of the time, it's spent with linebackers. Mm-hmm. And so when the Bills see those 12 personnels, one running back, two tight ends on the field, which they did see the most, sixth most last year, and were one of the worst teams against 12 personnel, Michael Hoyt is that chess piece. And he can play outside linebacker. He can play on the ball with three linebackers on the field, play on the ball like a Sam linebacker, and shut down the strong side of the formation, allow guys like Matt Milano and Dorian Williams to run and chase and make plays on the ball.
The draft is 1 month from tonight. The first round begins 1 month from tonight. We just talked about wide receiver. What do you think they still need at wide receiver? I mean, maybe speed, right? I would say, personally, that's my thought. I mean, they talked a lot about it. They don't have the burner necessarily. I also look at the group and say, where is a guy getting a lot of snaps from right now? But is there anybody that you look at in the draft and say, you know, Sal, maybe at 30 or even on day number two, there's a few guys that could fit for what they might be wanting?
Yeah, I'd say the only guy that I would look at pick 30 would be Matthew Golden, but I think many of us assume he's probably going to be gone by them. I think day two is the best fit, and I talked about Brady earlier, and yes, they do need a vertical threat, a guy that can, you know, take the top off the defense, and I know that kind of set up the expectations of getting a guy like that in free agency and why the reaction that we saw from a lot of fans when they signed Josh Palmer, that was not what we were expecting as fans. So I get that. But I think day two is kind of that area to look for a guy like that. I mean, not while he may not test very fast, but a guy like Trey Harris from Ole Miss is a guy that has won, especially if you're talking against man coverage. He can go down the field, primarily an X-type player. Kind of comes from an offense that I know it's a name that a lot of fans don't want to talk about anymore, but Gabe Davis, when he was at Central Florida, very similar, like, route tree and usage, made a lot of the routes look the same, whether it's a go route, a post route, a stop route. But I do think there are flashes on film of him running a pretty good route tree. I think he's a guy that could be brought in on day two that can push the, you know, take the cap off the defense with not just his top speed, but also how he runs routes. I think Luther Burden, I think he's a guy that's kind of falling right now, according to the masses. 5'11", 208, you know, a guy that can do a lot of stuff with the ball in his hand. And that's the thing, again, with Joe Brady's offense, yes, they need a vertical stretch guy, but in many ways, getting the ball out of Josh's hand was really the calling card for the Bills last year, whether it's to Khalil Shakir, whether it's to the running backs. And so I think guys like that, day two, I think that's where they're going to be looking if you're talking the wide receiver position, because I think, as most fans will agree, a lot of the focus will be on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, let's go there now, and we'll wrap up with interior and edge if you'd like to, but especially on the interior, most people think, Eric, that that's where the Bills are going to focus a lot, especially considering Ogunjobi is still going to miss the six games, and they already had a need right there. So this is a deep defensive tackle draft. We've heard a lot about that. What kind of guys, what kind of players do you think are in that sweet spot where they would fit the Bills and they'd be available?
So my draft crush at the tackle starts with Derek Harmon from Oregon. Now, he's a guy that likely his stock is going through the roof right now because he's got the measurables, 6'4", 313, 34-plus inch arms. I think he's a perfect fit for the Bills scheme. He's very disruptive. When I first watched his film, it was the first prospect I looked at, and I was like, this is a Daquan Jones clone. He's got the size, the length, the ability to be disruptive in the pass game, but the ability to, you know, stack and anchor at the point of attack. 55 total pressures last year. He's just a super disruptive player, but he's a guy that might not even make it to 30. Another D tackle from the MAC, Toledo, Darius Alexander, 6'3 and change, played at about 310 pounds, 34 inch arms. So he's got the length and size to play shade nose tackle in the Bills scheme. He's got the explosiveness, which the Bills love. So if you look at his combine stats of 31 and a half inches in vertical, a broad of 9'4 and a 28 bench reps, in the bench press at 225, that's the second highest among D tackles. I think he's another really good fit to not only play some time at shade nose tackle, but back up the three tech position as well, especially once, while Ogunjobi serves that. And then finally, I know that everyone wants to talk about Kenneth Grant from Michigan. While I do think that early on he's probably more of a two-gap or a two-down guy, I do see flashes of that quickness and explosiveness that could win in the Bills scheme. And just the breadcrumbs that we've heard from this staff when it comes to evolving on defense, when Sean McDermott said that in his presser, and then the interview we did in the film room with Terrell Bernard last year, talking about how opposing offenses were attacking the Bills with ball control style and how they needed to get better on first down and then tighten coverage on later downs. I think guys like those three make sense, especially if you're talking in and around pick 30.
Eric Turner, Cover One. Great stuff over at Cover One. Tell everybody where they can find your work, the film breakdowns you guys are doing, and everything else.
Right. It's at CoverOne.net. We do salary cap stuff. We do film breakdowns. Every Wednesday night, we break down film, whether it's for the draft prospects or the games, post games. We break down film. We've had several of the Bills players on in the film room in the last few weeks. Michael Hoyt, as soon as he signed, we had him on. We had Terrell Bernard last week. Tonight, we're recording with Gregory Rousseau. So if you can find us on all social media platforms at Cover One and on the YouTube channel, again, Cover One.
You got it, buddy. Thanks for coming on today. I'm sure we'll catch up again. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Al. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you got it. That is Eric Turner doing a good job over there, Cover One. Some good film breakdown. Smart stuff. You want to learn a little bit more about football? You want to get a little more educated about some of the ways that, you know, players are being used, what their strengths are, scheme fits, schemes in general. Eric and I did some stuff last year. It was really just a gridiron 101. I think I have to remember what we called it, but we did a few audio sessions together where we just kind of basically broke down and explained what some of the terminology is in football, what a one technique is, what an X receiver is. You hear a lot of these things, and sometimes people go, I don't know what that is. I don't want to ask because I don't want to seem like I'm dumb. You're not. Not at all. I mean, football people like to throw football terms out there that a lot of other people don't know. And it's not unlike a lot of other things. So, yeah, I enjoyed that. And that was a good conversation right there. So we'll catch up with him again. And once again, he is at Eric J. Turner. That's with a K, Eric J. Turner, and at Cover One. Good stuff there. We'll take a timeout when we come back. Yesterday, last night, Matt Bove and I recorded It's Always Game Day in Buffalo. And I gave Matt a question. We did a real fun exercise. And man, it has really stirred the masses up here. So I'm going to go over what that exercise was as far as the draft and some really interesting data for you as well. And we'll pick it apart a little bit when we come back here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
Oops. Saves the ball with the leap. Knocked out of bounds. Deflected by me and off to the side.
Now watch. Oh, let's see if watch.
Oh, great. It's going right for you. Did you see that?
Put it on the list. Deflection.
It was going for your hand.
Harlan.
What exactly happened there, Kevin Harlan? I think you need the video there to understand what happened.
Yeah, it's a little tough sometimes, but basically the ball is flying out of play onto the sidelines.
Okay.
And Kevin Harlan like stands up and just like basically like knocks it out of the air, like saves his color commentary guy, and the ball goes flying off in another direction.
I saw Kevin Harlan last year. We went out to eat one night before a Bills game, and happened to go to a hotel where a friend of ours was, and I see Kevin Harlan down in the lobby, the hotel. Kevin Harlan! There you go. And it was really great, just kind of catching up. So he's fantastic at what he does as well, and he was just super gracious, really nice. Speaking of that, you know what? I wanted to give a little I don't do Hey Buddy during the off season, but it would have been a perfect Hey Buddy for this week. Did you see the New York Rangers celebrated Sam Rosen over the weekend? Sam Rosen is one of the best to ever do it. He really is. That's where "it's a power play goal" comes from. Like, he was the one that kind of, that was his signature saying. And I had a chance. So I went to Syracuse with Sam Rosen's son. His son was literally in my class at Syracuse. Same age as me. And found out, oh my God, his name is Garrett. Like, oh, you're Sam Rosen's son. Wow, that's really cool. Blah, blah, blah. So early 90s, we're friends. I don't remember exactly what year it was. Rangers are in Buffalo, and he's like, "Hey, my dad's calling the game in Buffalo. You know, if you want to go to the game." I said, "Sure." And back then, it was him and John Davidson were he was his color analyst. So I went to the game to meet Sam Rosen, hang out with his son, and his son said, his son Garrett was like kind of doing some stat work for them and things like that. So anyway, we go to the game. Here's what happened. If you remember, a lot of people remember this. You won't remember this, but you're going to be like, what are you talking about? Back at the old Odd, Josh, they had, when the visiting team, the visiting play-by-play and color guy, there was no seat for them in the press box. They literally had a bucket that overhanged, and you'd have to crawl into it, and you'd sit in a bucket. Like, if think about the third level of KeyBank right now, and if hanging off the third level was a bucket where people would sit. And they were in this like caged bucket. That's what it was. It was called a bucket, I think. And they would have a camera there, and they'd have the color analyst and the play-by-play literally sitting there. So I go and I'm talking to Sam, and Garrett's there. And Garrett had a soda that he put down. And he went to grab it and he hit it and it fell over on top of everybody. And security comes up and they were like, "Hey, you need to leave." He's like, "I'm working here." But that's how they used to have the visiting play-by-play guy. People remember. I don't know. I've looked for pictures of it. You could see one in a picture of the Odd. I did find one time where I'm like, oh, yeah, there it is. Look at that thing. It was a little picture of it. If anybody could find a picture of that, send it to me. Because I always tell people about the story of the bucket where the visiting play-by-play and color commentator used to sit at the old Odd. It was fascinating because they could not be up in the actual press box. There was no room for them. So they did that. Anyway, so got to meet Sam, got to meet JD. 2 decades later, I don't know, about 10 years ago now, I guess, maybe a little less, Rangers are in town. I go to a Sabres game. I'm up in the press box. I go up to Sam Rosen. I'm like, "Hey, Sam, I was friends with your son, Garrett, in school. I came." He's like, "Sal, I remember you." It was amazing. And it was 20 years later. Very cool, right? Just to have that interaction with him and know that he remembered. And he was super gracious with his time. We talked about it. I said, "Hey, how's Garrett doing?" And haven't talked to him in a long time. But either way, really cool. Sam Rosen. They celebrated Sam Rosen over the weekend with the New York Rangers. He's one of the best to ever do it. And I'm glad. Don't love the fact the Rangers won a cup. It's not necessarily a hated rival. But I was glad that he got to call, you know, a Stanley Cup championship in 94. Unfortunately, obviously, RJ never got a chance to call a Stanley Cup championship. The Rangers did. They hadn't won one since 1940, then they win one in 1994. And they're very disappointing this year, by the way, the Rangers, aren't they? They might miss the playoffs.
Lots of bad vibes around the Rangers right now.
Yeah.
Just like everything going on there with the players and all the stories coming out with like the management and everything. It's a weird.
Does it feel like they could move on from Drury?
I don't know. I don't know if it's that bad, but if it's, you know, like one of those toxic environments, then maybe, but it also feels like they're kind of on the edge of maybe another rebuild Because mm-hmm. I mean, if you think about it, their rebuild they just had where they got Capococco and Alexi Lafreniere, it was 2 years. That was it. Yeah. Like they picked second overall and first overall, and then they were right back at it. But it's like you got guys aging out like Artemi Panarin and Mika Zibanejad and all those guys. They just traded Jacob Trouba. Like that's their captain or former captain, I should say. There's a lot of like weird stuff in the Rangers organization right now, and I'm really curious as to where they go next.
Rangers right now are sitting on the outside looking in. The Senators and Canadiens hold the two wildcard spots, and they both have two games in hand on the Rangers, by the way. They've played two less games than the Rangers. The Rangers are a point behind the Canadiens, 5 points behind the Ottawa Senators, who are in town tomorrow night. It is the return of Dylan Cousins. I mean, he was just traded, but you got to think they'll do some sort of video thing for Cousins tomorrow, right? Right away?
I feel like it, yeah. There's got to be something. Olofsson got a video.
But I mean, like, how quickly was that? I think it would happen right away.
Yeah.
It's so quick, but I still think you do it. It's his first time back.
For sure.
I think it's kind of like it's kind of like the rule of doing these things.
And it's also like you knew it was coming. Like, mm-hmm. you can look ahead at the schedule and see, oh, they're going to play the Senators again here. Like, so the people that do that sort of thing knew that they had to make that decision very quickly. So it's not like you had to wait a while and all the schedule's out. When is it going to be, you know, like, I think they're going to have something.
He has played well, Dylan Cousins. There's no doubt. I'm not sounding the alarms of, oh, here we go, another Conn Smythe winner winning the Stanley Cup for the Senators. But take a look what he's done since he's been in Ottawa. Let's see, 1, 2, 3 goals and 1, 2, 3, 4 assists. He's already got 7 points in 5, 6, 8 games. 7 points in 8 games.
He went into a place that had a lot of good vibes going, though.
Yeah,
I mean, they're on a playoff push, and there's a lot of stuff going on there that I think is influencing
that. And I think that totally matters. I agree with you.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
Because, like, look at what happened with Casey Mittelstadt last year. He did the same thing in Colorado, and then now this year he gets traded to Boston.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm not saying that's going to happen to Dylan Cousins, but I wouldn't be surprised.
No, I totally understand what you're saying. The vibes part and what you're playing for and meaningful hockey means something. We haven't had that here in Buffalo in quite a while. All right, Matt Bove and I last night recorded It's Always Game Day in Buffalo. Check it out. It's on the Odyssey app. It's wherever you pod, iTunes, Spotify, and, of course, the video. And you need to watch the video on this one. At Sal Sports is the YouTube channel. Subscribe to it. Watch the video of last night's pod because I put on the screen. It's a visual type of exercise. We did talk through it, but it is a visual exercise. And I asked Matt. I said, Matt, I put a spreadsheet together. Of course I did. And said, all right, I have 7 different columns, and it's each round and every pick the Bills have had under Brandon Bean. So first round, here's all the players. Second round, here's all the players. Next column's third round, here's all the players. And, for example, he's had 6 first-round picks. Josh Allen, Tremaine Edmonds, Greg Rousseau, Ed Oliver, Dalton Kincaid, Kyrie Elam. We did this for every round. Only Brandon Bean, 2018 till now. And I told Matt, rank each guy according to how good of a pick it was in each round. So, obviously, Josh Allen's the best first-round pick. So he had Allen. And actually, I disagreed. His next one was Tremaine Edmonds, then Greg Rousseau. These are only first-rounders. Then Ed Oliver, Dalton Kincaid, Kyrie Elam. Now, obviously, a guy like Dalton Kincaid, book is still not written on him. He's only in year number 2. If he was fantastic, he could be higher, but he still has a chance to rise up this board. I would disagree and I would put Greg Rousseau at number 2 ahead of Tremaine Edmonds, but the rest I would keep. Ed Oliver, then Dalton Kincaid, and then, of course, Kyrie Elam at the end. This has sparked a lot of debate. Some people did not agree with Matt that he put Osiris Torrance ahead of James Cook as a second-round pick. What do you think about that? Matt has Osiris Torrance as a better second-round pick than James Cook.
I mean, I could see the argument.
I could, too. I didn't fight back much on it.
The offensive line is very stable, and it has gotten a lot more stable since he's been there. But, I mean, James Cook was...
And he's started every game. He played every snap his rookie year. James Cook really didn't come into his own until his second year, which is fine. The same year they drafted Osiris, and he's been fantastic. But they are clearly the top 2 guys there. And then you go to Epenesa, Coleman, Bishop, Cody Ford, and Boogie Basham. Third round, the Bills have had a very good third round under Brandon Bean, okay? Spencer Brown, Matt gave number 1 as the best third round pick. Then Terrell Bernard. Then Harrison Phillips, who's with Minnesota, has had a nice career. Then Dawson Knox, Devin Singletary, Dorian Williams, Zach Moss, and Dwayne Carter rounded out. That's a really good third round class, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, that's really good. And I think Dwayne Carter can really step things up this year, too. He's going to have a lot of opportunity early in the season. So,
How about this, though? This is a crazy stat, Josh. Have you looked at this sheet yet? Okay, I'm going to ask you this. Since 2018, Brandon Bean has had 55 draft picks, okay? He's drafted 55 players. How many fourth rounders? Since 2018, he's had 7 drafts. Mm-hmm. How many fourth rounders? I'll give you, okay, for example, he's had 6 first rounders and 10 fifth rounders. How many fourth?
Ooh. I feel like you're setting me up for either a very high number or a very low number.
Of course I am. You have to decide.
Man. I'm going to go on the lower end of things. I'm going to say like 5.
3.
3?
The Bills under Brandon Bean have only had 3 fourth round picks.
I thought 5 was going to be too low.
I mean,
low.
I know,
that's
right?
Crazy.
It's amazing.
That's crazy.
And they've been good. You ready? Taron Johnson, Gabe Davis, and Ray Davis. That's it.
Wow.
That's it.
And they've all been very good in their own respects. Like,
yes.
Taron Johnson is obviously
he's an all-pro.
Yeah, and then Ray Davis has been great this year, and Gabe Davis had...
As a fourth-rounder, Gabe Davis was a fine pick.
Yeah.
He's very good.
Yeah.
He had a good four-year run.
That's crazy. His picks in the later rounds are incredible.
Well, fifth round, there was this debate. Matt put Wyatt Teller as his best fifth-round pick over Khalil Shakir and a bunch of other guys that definitely wouldn't go there, but would you have Teller or Shakir there? And I agree with it. I think Teller. He's a two-time all-pro.
I think that's right, but it's just I think it's a name that people do forget about sometimes,
yes.
Just like because of just how everything happened and everything. But like, Shakir's on his way though. I think Shakir is going to vie for that number one spot soon. But I think that's right for
Matt. I tweeted all this out. Go check it out at Sal Sports. I have the list. I have the rankings from Matt, and it was a really fun exercise. No doubt, Christian Benford has been his best sixth round pick. No doubt. The debate we had was between Damar Hamlin and Tyler Bass as the number two.
I mean, that's tough. That's tough because Tyler Bass, for a few years, he was nailing everything. And then there's that one stretch. But Damar Hamlin's really turned into something nice, too. Like,
as a sixth-round pick, yeah. Damar Hamlin, he started at safety last year for a team that went to the AFC title game. He's a sixth-round pick.
And especially after everything that happened, too.
Yes. Right. Ray McLeod's on this list. Jaquan Johnson, who people say, like somebody said, he's a miss. Jaquan Johnson was a four-year main special teams guy as a sixth-round pick. You'll always take that for a guy like that. Isaiah Hodgins, Matt Araiza, Tylon Grable, who won the swing tackle job. And then, how about this, the last round, the seventh round. The best seventh-round pick, and I agree with it, Dane Jackson. He was a seventh-round pick of the Bills.
Yeah, that's right.
Over Darryl Bam Johnson, Alex Austin, who is still playing. He picked off Josh Allen. He's a main backup for the Patriots. Tommy Sweeney, Baylen Specter. And then you get down to some guys who really didn't play. So pretty interesting, right?
Yeah.
Here's another
Dane Jackson's a seventh-rounder, too.
Dane Jackson didn't make the team his first year. He was waived. He had to join the practice squad. He could have been picked up. He could have gone anywhere. And then he eventually was elevated, eventually signed, and we know where it is today. And then the other interesting anecdote that I found while looking at this is not totally like unique. I just think it's interesting because through 7 years of drafting, Brandon Bean has never drafted a player from Alabama, Michigan, or Ohio State. Now, there's been guys that they signed. Levi Wallace, Alabama. They traded for Amari Cooper. He went to Alabama. There's been guys, but never actually drafted anyone. And it's so funny, folks. I get people in my mentions saying, well, they only like these underdog stories, not big school. No. That's not true. They've drafted guys from big schools. And oh, by the way, spare me with all that. When I look back at Brett Veach's drafts, the Kansas City Chiefs general manager, the same amount of drafts, 7 of them. He also drafted no one from Alabama, no one from Ohio State, and 1 fifth rounder from Michigan. That's it. Here's the point. And Howie Roseman, he has quite a few. Howie Roseman has just loaded up on Georgia guys, by the way, right? We all know that. Here's the point, folks. Where a guy went to school and where you draft from, what schools, has actually no correlation on how good an organization is. Josh Allen went to Wyoming, okay? I mean, Patrick Mahomes went to Texas Tech. So there you go. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back and we'll wrap up your Monday on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Okay, it was 6:10 when I said we had 10 more names in the transfer portal than it was a half hour before that. I'm sorry, it was 11:10 when we had like 610 names. It's been 43 minutes since then. How many you want to guess now?
I'm going to go with 657.
Close. 646 transfer names.
Wow.
In the transfer portal. It is a minute. It's a name a minute.
That's awesome.
It is a name a minute. People are like, how do you know? Verbalcommits.com. Go to verbalcommits.com and then just hit transfers. And then if you scroll down to the left, it has all the number of names. Like, I'm going to refresh right now. 647, baby. We got it. One more. Like, every time you refresh after every minute, there's another name there. All right. Good show today. Tomorrow, got a special treat for everybody. You ready? Micah Hyde's going to join us. Micah Hyde is going to be on the Extra Point Show tomorrow with us at 11 a.m. He is going to talk, obviously, about his career in Buffalo. He's retired, just announced his retirement, and his charity softball game is coming up on May 4th, Sunday, May 4th. So we'll talk with Micah Hyde tomorrow right here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. In the meantime, Sabres Live up next. Then it's One Bills Live, Show up in the Bulldog after that. Have a great rest of your Monday on WGR.